This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Stress is a normal part of office life, but too much of it can be counterproductive and cause serious problems. An American Psychological Association survey says more than a third of American workers experience chronic work stress, costing businesses billions each year in medical expenses and missed work hours. But there are ways companies can help individuals manage with self-care in the office and tactics that employees can use on their own. Here to talk about office stress and ways to manage it are Dr. Diana McIntosh, Associate Professor at the University of Cincinnati's College of Nursing and Coordinator of the College's Psychiatric Mental Health Nurse Practitioner Postmaster Certificate Program, and Dr. Cal Adler, Professor of Psychiatry at the UC College of Medicine. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So on the scale of stress, Cal, where does workplace stress rank in terms of being is this a major source of stress for people?
Absolutely. Because when you think about it, we spend much of our working day, much of our waking day at work. It looms large in most of our activities. And so workplace stress can be really become overwhelming. And because of the importance of the workplace for many of us, it can kind of take on an outsized role in how we react to things even outside of the workplace. So that workplace stress can spill over into affecting how we interact with our families, with our friends, things we do well outside of work.
Diana, the American Psychological Association survey says more than a third of American workers experience chronic work stresses. Do you think that's a pretty accurate number?
Actually, I've seen it as high as 40%. So yes, I think it is probably a pretty accurate number.
Now, what are the health effects of workplace stress on an individual?
The health effects can be both physical and emotional. Certainly with acute stress, you'll see people experience headaches, stomach aches, lack of sleep. They have nightmares, sometimes dreams. They dream about work. They dream about things that are going on. If the stress actually gets even more chronic and the job stress not attended to, they can actually end up having more severe physical symptoms like hypertension, high blood pressure, or they can actually have insomnia and lack of sleep many, many nights. And then the emotional distress, anxiety, can sometimes occur in depression.
Can workplace stress lead to something as devastating as a heart attack, Cal? Oh,
absolutely. Certainly, stress has been shown to contribute to all sorts of physical ailments. Heart attack, stroke, high blood pressure, of course, is a contributor to cardiovascular disease. And so effects can be mediated through high blood pressure and what have you. But stress can have a more direct effect, too. It affects the cortisol release and a number of important hormones that affect inflammation, inflammatory response. And so chronic stress can itself increase your risk of heart attack, stroke, and a variety of other ailments.
Mm-hmm. What's the impact on businesses? What do they see in terms of the effects of stress on their workers?
Well, it's going to be, in some ways it's hard to measure because it's going to get spilled out in a lot of ways. Of course, the direct effects of losing medical days. Of course, it can be a significant loss if somebody has a heart attack or a major event of that kind. But in addition, chronic stress, can make you more prone to a variety of infections. People may be out more with colds, flu, things that you wouldn't necessarily ascribe to the stress, but may increase those missed days. And then, of course, chronic stress can spill over into psychological responses, too. It can create a more difficult workplace. If colleagues don't get along as well because of the chronic stress under which they're laboring, that can certainly affect productivity as well.
So let's talk about a little bit more some of the common causes and some of the common factors, Diana, that contribute to workplace stress.
Sure. Some of the causes that have been documented by people include such things as the work tasks or responsibilities don't match the person's skills or capabilities, so they feel stressed because they can't do the job. Sometimes shift work can cause stress when people change the hours that they're working from day to day or week to week. Other causes include feeling like leadership's not listening, not communicating with the workers. Low salaries are sometimes attributed to job stress. In addition, opportunities for growth or development, if people feel stagnant and that they can't grow or develop in the workplace, that will sometimes also contribute.
Mm-hmm. You know, technology is supposed to be something that that makes work easier and makes workers more productive. I'm just wondering how much technology plays a role in contributing to workplace stress.
Technology can be a two-edged sword. Let's go back not just before internet. Let's go back before the telephone. When you left work, you left work. The only way to find you is to send somebody looking for you. Now, you're never gone from work. First, they could call you. Now, they can email you. With smartphones, many people feel like they're never away from work. And so that stress just follows them everywhere. And, of course, as we get more productive, the amount of work we're expected to do goes up. So it really doesn't alleviate stress. If anything, I would argue that it increases the amount of stress under which with which we have to deal at work.
What do you think, Diana?
I agree totally with Dr. Adler. It's very hard for people to put that iPhone down, even if they have good intentions to do so. And then they feel like they're not being as productive because they didn't answer that email right away or they didn't return that phone call right away. There's not permission sometimes in workplaces not to do that.
You know, we've gone through a lot of uncertain economic times in recent years.
Right.
So I'm wondering, what role does job insecurity play in workplace stress?
Well, I would say it's something even larger than that. And it comes back to something Diana said about some of the major sources of stress. One of the big things that can increase stress is a sense of powerlessness. So that if you have two people who are under the same stressful environment, but one of the individuals feels that there's something they can do to address it, to mitigate it, and the other person feels that there's nothing they can do, that latter person will typically have a higher stress response. And so when people feel like they are powerless in their work environment, that can be a problem. Of course, technology can increase that because we're more, sometimes more removed from the people with whom we work. And so there's less we can do. And then the uncertain economic times really contributes to that as well, because people may feel like they've got fewer options because they can't afford to leave this job or risk losing this job. And then, of course, money is a major source of stress for everyone, and that just adds into the workplace stress that people are experiencing.
I certainly agree with Dr. Adler. The stress is really about people's physical and emotional responses to it. All of us experience stress. And so all of us are going to experience stress at work. However, how we respond to it is what's going to make the difference. And there are going to be things that we can't control. And when people try to control those things they can't, that does increase their stress.
I've always wondered, Diana, there are some people who seem to thrive under stress and some people who can barely survive even the slightest stress. So is workplace stress a highly individualized type of thing?
I certainly think it's individualized, and certainly Dr. Adler talked about the two people. One would respond differently than the other mm-hmm. to the same circumstances. So I think the key is really how you manage the stress. It's not necessarily the stress, but how you manage those responses that makes the difference for that person.
Well, and what's the relationship, Cal, between workplace stress and burnout? Are you more likely to suffer from burnout if you're struggling with workplace stress?
Sure. Not surprisingly. I mean, a lot of things contribute to burnout, but one of the major sources of burnout is people just become overwhelmed with what they're doing. And that's often associated with just feeling just a high degree of stress and unrelenting stress rather than intermittent stress, stress that just doesn't really ever go away. And that does. It leads to burnout. And of course, that's another source of lost productivity for the employer.
Mm. Can workplace stress lead to workplace violence? Is there any kind of a relationship there?
Yes, although I don't think you'd want to overstate the connection. Of course, overt workplace violence is relatively uncommon. There are a lot of things that can potentially contribute to workplace violence. But stress certainly can be one of those things, particularly in conjunction with an individual who is potentially prone to that violence.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, Diana, what are signs that you should look for that somebody is undergoing workplace stress?
I think some of those signs we've already alluded to, frequent absences.
Mm-hmm.
tardiness, people who go around talking about, I have to quit this job, I just can't take it anymore. And people will be that verbal about it. In addition, they may say, I have a headache every day. So you'll see some of those physical symptoms that we talked about or the emotional symptoms. You'll see less productivity. The tasks that they used to do and do well, they aren't able to do them as well.
Are they maybe more mistake prone as well because
of
the stress?
Yes, definitely more mistakes. And that's very difficult in particular for people who are perfectionists. So people who really like to do a good job at work and really do want to be competent, when they begin to make mistakes, that even causes more stress for them.
But, you know, some level of stress is beneficial, right? So how do you differentiate? I mean, how do you know where the line is, Cal?
Well, and I'd go beyond beneficial. I'd say inevitable. You know, Diana made that point a moment ago. We're not all jellyfish floating with the ocean. I mean, as soon as you go to work, there's going to be a certain level of stress navigating traffic, walking in. Every job is going to involve a certain amount of even minimal conflict. There are things you need to do. There are certain risks you need to run. There's always going to be at least some stress. And then, of course, that complicates identifying individuals for whom it's a problem, because you can't just look at stress, because, again, stress will always be there. It's when does that stress reach a point for that individual that it is creating creating difficulties, creating pathologies in a sense. I mean, you pointed out that stress in some cases can be beneficial, right? It's a normal physiologic response to challenge. But at a certain point, that normal physiologic response can get essentially overdone, overblown, and start causing problems, causing both short-term and long-term difficulties for an individual.
Yeah. So if I'm undergoing a high degree of workplace stress, should I be concerned about developing depression?
Certainly, stress can be linked to depression for some individuals. So I've said all the hard parts about diagnosing problems with stress. One of the good parts is it's not high blood pressure. And we talked about high blood pressure, but you'll remember high blood pressure is one of those things where you feel absolutely fine, typically. But in the long term, it can affect your health in very serious ways, and so you need to treat it even though you feel fine. Stress, in a sense, isn't that way, meaning typically you know you're under stress. And typically you can tell that you're having problems with the stress because you'll start to feel bad. You'll complain about it. And you'll notice that you are potentially sick more, have more headaches, as Diana said. You're less productive than you used to be. It's not necessarily that subtle. The problem, really, I think, is less in identifying and more in what do you do about it. Because that can be the really tricky part.
So it's not easy to miss this. The tricky part is to do something about it.
Right.
And not just struggle along and plod along and suffering from it.
Right, which I think is what most of us end up doing.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy to address.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's talk with Rathik in Clifton. Good afternoon. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share my experience, and you know, I was just liking the conversation. So I'm a grad student, and I'm doing PhD at University of Cincinnati. And PhD, as you know, you understand, is a tough course, a tough degree to get, and you have research and you have classes, and sometimes your experiments don't go well. So I just wanted to share, like, you know, I use exercise as my way of reducing stress. In particular, I found that racquetball really helps me, you know, like just as it becomes like a vent that I can vent my frustration from the lab, and just those 1.5 hours, 2 hours every other day helps me just, you know, calms me down and helps me focus on the next task that I have to do, you know. So I was just liking the conversation. I wanted to share, you know, that exercise and something that you enjoy doing can probably help you reduce the workplace stress.
And in your case, it's racquetball.
Yes, absolutely.
Very, very good. Thank you, Rathik. We appreciate the phone call. Exercise, great stress reliever, isn't it?
Sure. Although he made a couple of really, really good points. One of them, though, is that he mentioned he really likes it. So it is important
that you like your stress reliever?
Right, because it's something you need to do consistently. Playing racquetball once every 3 months is probably not going to do it. He makes time to do it every couple of days, and that's really what you need to do. And that's going to be a lot easier if you like it and it's not a chore. The other thing that we haven't talked about is healthy versus unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, exercise is a healthy one.
Right.
Less healthy, drinking. That is a coping mechanism for some people. And it may even help relieve the stress. The problem, of course, is that it can create its own stressors, as well as having obvious detrimental physical effects. You know, smoking is a classic stress reliever. You know, the smoke, I'm old enough to remember when people would step outside, you know, for 5-10 minutes, once an hour, relax, get away from work, socialize, light up, have a mild stimulant. It's great. I mean, of course, it causes cancer and kills people. But from a stress relief point of view, it was great, but not really a recommended stress relieving technique because of these other effects. And so it's important to identify something that you'll do, that you enjoy, and that won't create its own problems. Racquetball, obviously, is a great choice.
Yeah, and it sounds like any exercise, as long as you like the exercise and it's something you can do repeatedly. I hear that, though, a lot of times from people who are struggling with whatever issue they might be struggling with, say, but it's so difficult to get myself motivated to exercise or do some activity to help with my disorder or my my stress. What do you advise for people first off, like it, but what are some other things they can do to get themselves motivated to do that necessary exercise?
I would agree that it is difficult sometimes when you're feeling as bad as you are to motivate yourself to exercise. And I think part of it is just doing it, to be honest with you, that they just have to say to themselves, I'm going to do it. And then they'll find the first time it's not going to work. I think what Kyle said is absolutely right. It's a repeated thing that's going to help. The other thing is that exercise doesn't have to be away from the workplace. What some people neglect to think about is that getting up from their chair and walking around the hall a couple of times and taking a short break, similar to what Cal was talking about when people went outside to smoke. That socialization is extremely important as well as the exercise. And it's important to do that at work, too. And even getting up out of your chair, swinging your arms, taking deep breaths, those things can also be very helpful.
And what about music?
Music's great. For some people, that's a great stress reliever to just kind of relax and listen to music. And schedule that in, schedule time. The one thing I would add, too, to what Diana said, is that it is important to make sure that you really do it. And sometimes, for some people, schedule it. I know that sounds counterintuitive, to add one more thing scheduled into
your business. You're stressed out already.
Right. But sometimes that's what you need to do, because otherwise things will encroach. Right? There's always something else you'll do instead, and before you know it, you're not exercising, you're not doing the things you want to do. This is something I tell people who are exercising for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes you just have to put it in your calendar and make it an appointment, just like your other appointments that you're going to keep.
And I guess, like Diana was saying, in terms of exercise, the more you do it, it might be tough at first.
Absolutely.
But the more you do it, the easier that's going to become for you.
Absolutely. As you get more comfortable, and just physically, of course.
And I think people begin to feel better, so they then begin to associate the exercise with, wow, it really does help. And that becomes the motivation as well.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Hannah in Northside. Good afternoon, Hannah.
Hi. Couple of things. I think the panel should proceed along to discuss how to handle bad behavior right into the workplace. The other thing is, I think the panel needs to go beyond stress management and talk about distress and on to burnout.
And when we say bad behavior, Hannah, you're talking about coworkers' bad behavior, or what are you referring to there?
Yeah, coworkers, bosses.
Yeah, because that's a contributor to workplace stress. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Anna. We appreciate the call.
Yeah, it's of course, I should say I'm not sure we qualify as a panel. I mean, only two of us. Can two people be a panel?
I think so. I think so. We'll take that as a nice compliment.
I'm there.
We're a panel. Okay.
So as half the panel. Absolutely. Interaction with coworkers is a potential major source of stress. Of course, it can also be a source of support, depending on your coworkers and your relationships and the nature of the workplace environment. But because these are people with whom you spend a great deal of time, in a potentially very stressful setting, their actions and how you relate to them can be a huge source of stress. I'm reluctant to get into concrete ways of dealing with that because it can vary so much. You know, depending on the problematic behaviors, it may range anything from talking to an individual to involving, you know, HR or your supervisor. Of course, depending on the problematic behavior, you may or may not want to talk to the individual. So I'm reluctant to get into specific advice without knowing, because the range of problems could be so great, and in some circumstances it would be bad advice.
Go ahead, Diana.
One thing I would just add to what Cal's saying, though, is I don't think it's helpful to then go behind the person's back and then talk to five people about the problem but still not have the problem resolved. I would agree with him that sometimes you deal directly with the employee or the coworker, sometimes you go to the boss, sometimes you go to HR. But I think it increases stress when people go and talk with other coworkers and don't really try to solve the problem, just talk and talk and talk.
Have company attitudes changed over the last few decades about helping employees deal with workplace stress and stressful issues?
I would say definitely. They've definitely changed. You'll find that companies often offer workshops on helping their employees to identify stress. As Cal was saying earlier, the first step is being aware of it, and then the second step is how to manage it. So they'll teach ways to manage with it. You'll see a lot of companies that offer wellness programs that have an exercise component often to that. You'll see employees that teach their managers how better to deal with the problem employees or the bad behaviors that Hannah was talking about, so that there is actually trainings for them and how to best cope with that. And they also are teaching managers how to listen. And if there's probably the key to dealing with job stress is having a manager who is willing to listen, be non-judgmental, and not always feeling like they have to solve the problem, but allow the person to vent about it.
So we've talked about exercise and some different ways of coping with workplace stress, but what are some other self-care tactics that you would recommend for people?
Really, anything that can help get you away from work, in a sense, can let you focus on something else that's more relaxing, that you enjoy. So exercise is a common example because it's good for us in so many ways, and it's helpful. You mentioned music, which can be very helpful, but it going for walks. It could be, you know, playing games if that's something you like. But something that gets you out of the workplace headspace. Now, things that are going to take longer, you may want to do after work or during work. Again, just having periods of time. Diana mentioned 5 minutes of stretching, get up and walking around. I mean, that can be huge. It's going to vary a lot for each individual how they're going to build that into their day. But it's important that we get some time away from work.
Socializing, I take it, would be a good way to deal with stress.
Definitely. I know some companies, as a matter of fact, my son worked for two companies in which they would encourage once a week for the coworkers to eat together. And sometimes they would even buy the lunch so that the coworkers would eat together and socialize. So that's one example. Also, I think just dealing with the feelings that you have in the moment that you have them and not taking them home. And so it's inevitable that you're going to get angry or you're going to get aggravated at work sometimes. And so just a simple exercise of acting like you're using a straw, you're sucking up the straw, and then you breathe out through your nose. And you'll find that your tongue actually gets a little cool. And so people will talk about that having a calming effect because they've gone from feeling hot and raged and angry to feeling cool.
Yeah, and I don't want to suggest that people become bad employees or uncooperative employees, but how much does learning how to say no help in dealing with workplace stress?
It certainly can. Of course, you've got to be judicious with your no.
Right.
And that's going to vary a great deal. But, you know, along those lines, if you can turn off your email, not check your email after work for a period of time, say no to that. That can be huge. Just get time away from work.
Yeah. How can a manager who sees an employee who's obviously struggling with stress, how can that manager have a safe professional conversation? How do they start that conversation with the employee about, I notice you're having a problem with this?
I think one of the ways to make it safe is that you describe the behaviors you're seeing rather than label them. So I probably actually wouldn't start with, I noticed the problem, but instead I probably would start with, I've noticed you've been late to work for a few days. And I noticed that usually you get such and such done by the end of the day and it's carrying over to the next day. And I was wondering if something was going on. So that might be the way I would start the conversation.
No, I absolutely agree. Keep it fairly concrete at first with what you've noticed rather than inferring. And then if the conversation evolves in that direction, then you can talk about the stress or what have you, rather than coming in and assuming what's been causing the behaviors that you're seeing.
Is there a point, Cal, where someone should seek professional help for the workplace stress they're dealing with?
Yeah, and I wanted to bring that up. I mean, excuse me. I mean, there's always a risk in talking about these things for me. You know, if you're a hammer, everything's a nail. I'm a psychiatrist. It always comes down to therapy. So it's always my go-to. But I would think about therapy. And psychotherapy is not just for people who are in extremis. You know, psychotherapy is really can be helpful for anyone who's having a problem. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be Woody Allen, you know, in psychoanalysis for the next 30 years. It can be very directed, focused on the problems at hand.
Okay. Well, Diana and Cal, thank you for joining me today. Dr. Diana McIntosh, Associate Professor at the University of Cincinnati's College of Nursing and Coordinator of the College's Psychiatric Mental Health Nurse Practitioner Postmaster Certificate Program, and Dr. Cal Adler, who's Professor of Psychiatry at the UC College of Medicine. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier, with help from Kevin Reynolds. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai, and Dave Shermer was our technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. According to a survey conducted by Public Citizen and the Treatment Advocacy Center, there are 10 times more individuals suffering from serious mental illnesses in U.S. prisons and jails than there are in state psychiatric hospitals. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll discuss how mentally ill inmates are cared for during their incarceration and the need for continued treatment after they're released. That's Cincinnati Edition, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.